Welcome to the Star Zone. I'm Patty Spagnuolo. From resource fairs geared towards our students to arts and entertainment aimed to connect with our community, Lansing Community College hosts many events throughout the year, and the Star Zone gives you a rundown on what's on the way, where it's happening, and how you can get into the zone at LCC. Hello, I'm your host, Patty Spagnuolo, and you're listening to the Star Zone. My guests today are Bill Brandt, who is currently the president of the Capital City Old Car Club, which was established in 1962. Bill shared that he has been a member for more than 30 years. My second guest is Scott Skronik. He is the development coordinator for the foundation at Lansing Community College and has been with the college for 17 years. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Today we are highlighting the car show happening at LCC's West Campus, located at 5708 Cornerstone Drive, and that will be going on from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, May 30th. So before we dive into that, I'm thinking I need you to explain how your purposes connect. What does the car show have to do with the LCC Foundation?
Well, let me handle that, my friends. So back in 2021, the Capital City Old Car Club, they reached out and they said, hey, we want to support the next generation of mechanics. And guess what we do here at LCC? We train the next generation of mechanics. So they wanted to set up a scholarship. So I met with them. They were very excited. We established a scholarship. And then they said, you know, we used to do a car show out in Grand Ledge. And it's not working out so great with traffic patterns and all that. So we really... is there some way we could work with LCC? And Lansing Community College has had an auto show out at West Campus in the past. So I said, I don't know, let me talk to some folks. So I contacted our friends out at West Campus. We started it out. Now, this auto show, the car club runs it as a fundraiser that supports their scholarship here at LCC. So every year, a student gets $1,000 to attend and be a future mechanic from the Capital City Old Car Club. So that's how we connect.
That is awesome. Wow. So is it typically a student that just graduated high school? Is that, or can anybody apply?
Anybody who is a student at LCC and is in the auto tech program can get a scholarship.
Wow. Bill, what do you think about that? How you were obviously involved from the ground up.
Well, several of our members are mechanics or retired, and one of our members, Bruce, you know, said, you know, hey, we need to do something to help get these kids involved in doing the mechanic work, plus getting them and trying to get them involved with the older cars. A lot of us my age are, you know, reaching the end, and we need to get some young blood into the hobby. So we figured that was a good way of doing it, give back to the community and help the kids, get them interested in the cars.
Well, that's the thing I was going to ask you, too, is so I'm assuming they're being trained at West Campus for what is currently being built, not necessarily, because there's a big difference between the cars you're driving and the cars that we're buying today off the lots.
Yes.
So how does that work?
Well, if they've got the experience and the training to work on today's cars, then they just need to find somebody like us older folks to say, okay, how do I do it without a computer?
Right.
You know, how do I learn how to adjust carburetors and adjust timing and stuff without just clicking a button and it telling me what's wrong? You got to learn to see the signs of what's wrong and how to fix it.
Right. Well, you know, and that's the other thing. This is getting off the beaten path a little bit, but with those cars that you bring to the show, I'm assuming that maybe you trailer them there?
Oh, no.
You drive them?
Oh, yeah. 99.5% are probably driven. You might get one or two that are trailered in. Some of the more exotic, you know, really expensive restorations and modifications, but most of the cars are all driven.
I mean, because of two thoughts there. One, you're putting mileage on an already older car. And then, two, if you crack that thing up, it's got to be harder to repair that car.
Yeah, finding parts can be a problem, depending on what model and year and make it is. But most car enthusiasts want to drive them. I mean, trailer queens are nice, but I don't want to sit in my garage and just look at it. I want to drive it.
Nice. Look at the lingo we're picking up already. Right. I love this. I'm going to go back to my guys at home and be able to, I'll be able to hang a little bit. So... does LCC have a students club that is car enthusiasts?
We don't currently have a registered student organization, an RSO, for car enthusiasts. that would be pretty neat to have.
Oh, that'd be awesome. But
in my conversations with the faculty in the automotive technical program, they're kind of their own club because they're there hands-on with their cohort of students. So I don't know. It's such a specific interest that is served by their classes as well. So,
okay. And they probably all as a unit sort of galvanize and do their own thing on weekends and whatnot is what you're saying. They're kind of through it. They're in it together, basically.
Exactly.
So, okay. And do you know, does the automotive technology program, does it teach like restoration or just mechanics of it? Like,
no, we don't here at LCC offer a restoration program, but powertrain, brakes, electrical, car HVAC, all of those mechanical areas. And as Bill said, you know, it's the ability to then say, I love cars, because many of the students who want to go into this work really love cars. And so then it's becoming exposed through things like the car show, where they become interested and more informed about old cars. I will say that last year I was sitting at the car show and a 1989 Oldsmobile Cutlass drove by. And that is the first car I remember my parents buying. And I said, no, I don't like that. I don't like that that's a classic car. That is not okay in my heart.
My gosh. Okay, so I want to jump to this question then. What was the first car you ever drove, like to school? I mean, it was actually yours, not one of your parents that you drove.
Oh, mine was a 65 Dodge Dart. It started with my folks drove it, and then it went through my two sisters, and I was the last one in line, and they told me if I paid the insurance, I could have it. So
nice. Was it a four-door?
Nope, it was a two-door, yeah. Little six-cylinder engine, nothing fancy.
Oh, my gosh. You don't still have it, I'm assuming.
No.
Okay.
The rust took care of that.
Did you drive it to high school, or was it after you graduated?
No, it was in high school.
Nice.
I made it halfway through my first year of college.
Wow, that's awesome. What about you, Scott?
Well, mine is much, much less cool.
Okay.
Mine was a 1994 two-door Ford Tempo.
Nice.
It was white, with a red stripe all around the side and red felt interior. It was my grandmother's car, and when she could no longer drive, I took over the payments in high school. And I drove that thing until it died, and that was about 9 years after I got it. I try to drive a car into the ground before I get a new one.
Right. Well, how many miles do you know did it have on it when you?
It had 160,000 some odd when I sold it to a dealer for $500 for parts. He said, well, I can give you the money for parts. And I said, yeah, that seems very fair.
Right. You know what kind of surprises me? And I don't know people's perception of what high mileage is. Like, because my Jeep almost has 150,000 on it. And I don't think anything of that. And my son will buy cars. He's like, oh, it's got 120,000. That's pretty good. You know, he tinkers and can fix older cars. And so for us, that's not a lot. I guess we don't think it's a lot unless it's turning 200,000. And then we're like, hey, that car, that's something right there. So what do you think, Bill?
Well, yeah, the newer cars with the technology and everything go a lot more. I know when I was a kid, you know, you had 30,000, 50,000 max. It's time to get rid of it.
Really?
Because it just didn't hold up like the newer cars do. You got better oils, you got better technology than you had back then.
See, I'm amazed by that. I feel like, okay, so I drove a 72 blue Chevy Nova. And I think that thing was around even long after I was done with high school and, you know, the whole bit. So I remember it even had a butterfly clip or something, and we used to have to stick a thing in it to start it because it needed enough air into the carburetor. Does that make sense? The things I remember, right? Mm. Okay, so dream car. What is your dream car or truck? And you can have more than one, because I do.
Oh, I would have to say probably anywhere from a 57 to 60 Dodge, DeSoto, Plymouth, or Chrysler, the forward-look cars with the big wings, the fins in the back.
Oh, wow. Okay. You're going, a little ways back then.
Yeah, I like the cars back then more than I like the ones now.
What about you, Scott?
Well, I'm not a car guy.
Okay.
Which is the funny thing about all this is that I like a car that gets me from point A to point B reliably. So my dream car, I actually got to own it, which was a Subaru Outback.
Nice.
And I owned that for about 10 years before selling it on to a young person just out of college.
Wow.
A little bit of money so that they could have something relatively reliable.
And the cycle continues.
Exactly. That's what you do.
Wow, there you go. Okay, well, so for mine, I have two, actually. One is a 1977 Oldsmobile Cutlass 442, two-tone, light blue with the white underbelly. That one used to go by our house all the time when I was growing up, and I loved that car. That was my dream car for high school. Of course, I drove the beat-up Chevy Nova. And then I'm a big fan of Wagoneers, and I'm thinking like 1980. I like the wood grain. You know, you get one that's the limited, and it's just, yeah. The only thing I don't like is sometimes the interiors are a little funky with some of those older cars. The Broncos are the same way, you know. It's that crushed velvet stuff and, you know, that kind of thing. But anyway, okay, I digress. So let's talk a little bit more about the show. What exactly will be going on Saturday? Will there be, you know, a circus going on and, you know, or is it just come look at the cars?
Well, no circuses, but we will, you know, be a lot of different cars, a lot of variety. Last year we had about 200. If the weather is cooperative, the Model T Club will be out there giving rides in their Model A's or Model T's, you know, depending on which members bring what. There's going to be food. We'll have a couple of food trucks out there. Two Guys Nomadic Grill and Mobile Munchies will be there. There'll be music, DJ.
Wow.
We will have a 50-50 raffle, and we're also having a quilt raffle. My wife and one of the other club members are quilters, and they've put together a quilt that's Route 66 themed. Oh. Seeing that it's the 100-year anniversary of Route 66 this year.
Oh, my gosh. Good plug. Yeah. Wow. Didn't know that.
And so they're going to raffle off that quilt.
Nice.
And be a lot of fun. We're hoping the weather cooperates. That's always the big unknown.
So there's food there, there's these raffles. I'm assuming the people that come, it's free to come to the event, but all this other stuff, you know, bring your pocketbook. You're going to pay for your food, obviously.
Well, yeah, you'll have to pay for your food and whatever raffle ticket you buy. Okay. Spectators, it's free admission.
Yeah, okay.
If you're bringing a car, the registration fee is $20.
Wow.
And like we said, all the proceeds go to that scholarship fund. Our scholarship fund.
What do the people that bring their cars, I mean, just the love of the cars, of course, I think that's a passion, and I think you put a lot of time and work into it and share it with other people, so thank you for that. Is there some sort of award that you're giving out?
Yes, there'll be awards. We'll have 30 we have 15 classes, so there'll be and second place in each of the classes, and that'll be a best of show. And it's a judge show. We have judges that go around and judge the cars, and it's a numerical score that they'll decide who's first, second, and such. Also, I forgot to mention, too, that the auto lab at the LCC will be giving tours of the lab at 11 and 1, so that'll be something to do as well.
Very cool. Wow.
Yeah, people are always amazed. It is, I've worked at LCC for 17 years. I know how cool LCC is. Lots of people know we've got things, but they've never been out to West Campus. They've never seen our auto lab. And just seeing it is one of the greatest advertisements. People talk about my nephew should come here, or my niece, or my granddaughter. When they see it, they realize how much we have to offer. And that is so very neat to see happen in real time at the show.
Right, right. So how many people does it take to run this organization? Because as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking, okay, you got all the scheduling, you had to line up all these other things. I mean, the food trucks, the DJ, all this stuff. And you must be keeping, you know, somebody's got to pay for it to have the DJ out there. So, I mean, this is like a mini organization.
Well, it's the club, the car club. We currently have 75 to 80 families in the club.
Wow.
We usually try to get about 50 volunteers to do the work, you know, being at the registration table, the gate, and the raffle tables and things like that. So it takes a few people to do it. This is our fifth.
This will be our fifth.
I think it's the fifth year. Okay. So the logistics of it is pretty much all ironed out by now. LCC does a great job of letting us, you know, giving us tables and chairs and stuff to set up for in the dining area, the eating area, and things like that. So it pretty much runs itself now. We just need the bodies to be there to facilitate stuff. And
well, I noticed looking at your website, you have something going on like every month.
Yeah, on the website, we have an events calendar. The way things are now, you can go to a car event every day. You'll pick from three or four a day, which ones you want to go to.
Okay.
Especially now, when getting into May and then June, July, August especially, you'll see some of them. There's four or five things listed for all the same day.
Wow.
So there's a lot of it out there to do. So our website will have that on there so people can go on the website and look at the event calendar, see what's going on in the area, and if they want to attend something.
Do you have to have a car to join? That sounds like a silly question, but do you have to have like a car or a classic car or something that you'd want to show just to be part of the organization?
Our club, you can join if you don't have a car. All you have to have is an interest. We have a range of cars from works in progress to one of our members has had several Auburns over the years.
Oh, wow.
So we have a total range. We have several members who don't even have cars. They just like cars. And you had mentioned earlier about the young kids getting into this. We're always looking for young members. You know, we're all getting my age, and we need some younger blood. And then what a better way for a younger person who's in the tech program who wants to learn about old cars, join a club with a bunch of guys who've been working on old cars for 40, 50 years. And there's your in to say, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that?
Right. You know, it's funny because I feel like there's always those urban legends or those old stories of, you know, you stop by this old guy's house and all of a sudden you see in his barn there's like a Dodge Charger from 1967 or so. You know what I mean? There's always that. It's like, does that really happen? Because
it hasn't happened to me.
Me either. I want a Wagoneer, so, you know, whatever. I want to find someone with one in their barn. So I'm curious, is there one big old car convention somewhere, like Vegas or somewhere, that you all go where across the country people come? And
there are several organizations that are, quote, nationals. Now, I'm a Chrysler guy or Mopar guy, so I know they have the Mopar Nationals every year down in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
I know Ford Collectors, they'll have a national show somewhere. Their street rod people have a national show. And for street rods, there's, you know, several different chapters in each state.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's the Oldsmobile Club here in town, the same way. There's several different chapters of the Oldsmobile Club.
Wow.
So, yeah, you can find an organization if you like a certain brand. There's groups out there that you can join and be part of for that brand.
Yeah.
And we're pretty tribal here in Michigan with our car brands because I grew up in a Ford family. And
okay, yeah.
When my second car was not a Ford, my father gave me a look.
A look.
And
I like
he
that.
Continues to give me a look anytime because now I drive a Chevy. And as a kid who grew up a NASCAR fan, that might be the biggest no-no I could make.
Wow.
Is driving a Chevy for a Ford family. So
that is funny. My dad, big Ford guy, and our family, Ford. And then my son switched it up when he got his first vehicle. It was a Dodge.
Uh-oh.
So that was us. I've had an Aspen, you know. Right now I'm driving a Jeep Wrangler. Yeah, so it is kind of funny though. You're right. You get stuck in those, and yeah, I know people who are just straight Chevy people. That's it. That's all they're gonna drive. So wow. All right. Is there anything else that we want to bring up about this car show that, you know, just come hang out? If it's a rain date, is there a rain date?
No, it's a rain or shine. So it's going to happen if it's raining or sunny. We're hoping for the sun. So keep your fingers crossed for the good weather.
Okay. I want to shift gears a little bit, and no pun intended. How, like, do we know, do the LCC students that go through the program, are they coming to the shows even after they've graduated? I know it's still the scholarship's still fairly young, so I assume you might have one or two graduates, or?
We have not had a graduate come to the show that we knew about.
Okay.
Certainly they may have come as a spectator. But unfortunately, when we have the car show is after the semester is over.
Oh, right,
for spring.
The 30th, sure.
So many of the students, they're off, they're working, they're doing what they're going to be doing for the summer.
Right.
So we do have a smaller student participation than we'd like. But if you're around campus, you'll be seeing the digital signage all over campus. We'll have information about the car show. It'll be on the page. If you go to lcc.edu/car show, we have an event page with links so that you can learn more about the Capital City Old Car Club. Or if you feel like donating, you can click. There's a donate now button right there. Or you can always go to lcc.edu/give now to support any scholarship or program here at LCC, the foundation. We support every type of student that there is. So,
all right. Bill, any parting comments?
No. Like I say, hopefully the weather cooperates and hope to see lots of spectators out there.
Awesome. Again, we are talking about the Capital City Old Car Club Car Show, which is a fundraiser for the Lansing Community College Automotive Tech Scholarship. It is being held on Saturday, May 30th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at LCC's West Campus. For more information, please visit lcc.edu/events or visit the Capital City Old Car Club website at oldcarclub.com. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. Thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Until next time, this is Patty Spagnolo wishing you well, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on the Star Zone. For more information on this episode, visit lccconnect.org. You can also find a complete list of Lansing Community College events by visiting lcc.edu/calendar. Until next time, thanks for getting into the zone.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's dual enrollment program offers the opportunity for qualified high school students to earn college credit while working towards their high school diploma. Dual enrollment lets students receive educational advancement in areas where the student's interest is displayed, especially in courses and academic areas not available in the student's high school. To find out more information about dual enrollment, visit lcc.edu.
Hey there, this is Dedalian, and I want to invite you to join me for a show called Behind the Connection. It dives into what's happening behind the scenes here at LCC Connect. It also provides you early introductions to new podcasts, some of the Connect initiatives that we are putting forth, and, of course, insights into the concept of building the voices, vibes, and vision of LCC Connect. Find out more about it at our website. It's lccconnect.org.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
A healthcare-related job training program is now offered 100% online through the LCC Job Training Center. The program prepares students for medical administrative careers and certifications, allowing them to learn at their own pace and on their own schedule. More information about the Medical Front Office Specialist Program can be found at lcc.edu/JTC.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Amy Wagoner from the Historical Society of Michigan with a Michigan History Moment. Even in Michigan, every summer brings a heat wave. Temperatures soar into the 90s and even touch the 100-degree mark. But nothing could top a single week in July 1936 when the temperatures soared in a record-setting heat wave. Michiganders had enjoyed a pleasant 4th of July. In the southwest states, however, a heat wave was building, pushed along by a high-pressure system on the west coast. On July 6th, North Dakota sweltered in temperatures that hit 121 degrees. In the days before widespread weather forecasting, Michiganders remained blissfully ignorant of the temperatures headed their way. On the morning of July 8th, thermometers were already registering in the low 80s. By mid-afternoon, the temperatures had topped 104 degrees. An Ann Arbor farmer dropped dead in the heat, as did a Detroit laundry worker and a house painter. By the day's end, the stifling heat had claimed 8 lives. The temperature hit 102 degrees the next day, and a dozen more Detroiters died. 19 more died the day after that. Meat sales plummeted because no one wanted to cook. Prices soared for lemons used to make lemonade. Water usage jumped, as did beer consumption. Few people had air conditioning in their homes, so they packed into air-conditioned movie theaters. Some people sealed up their homes, propped open their refrigerator doors, and slept on the kitchen floor. Many others camped outdoors in city parks and sought refuge in lakes, rivers, and swimming holes. The heat wave continued for days. Doctors and nurses tended to hundreds of cases of heat-related illnesses. Scores of people died. In Detroit, the city morgue filled to its 280-person capacity. On July 14th, thermometers in Detroit recorded a high of 104.3 degrees. Then, that afternoon, a cold front swept through the Great Lakes region. Rain poured down in torrents, and by the next morning, the temperature had fallen to 62 degrees, an overnight drop of 42 degrees. For 7 days, temperatures in Detroit had averaged almost 102 degrees. The sweltering heat wave had killed 570 people in Michigan and about 5,000 nationwide. The Michiganders who lived through the heat wave of 1936 remembered it for the rest of their lives. The event is also remembered in history books. The little community of Mayo in the northeast Lower Peninsula set a record temperature for Michigan on July 13, 1936 that has never been broken, 112 degrees. This Michigan History Moment was brought to you by MichiganHistoryMagazine.org.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
If you're considering returning to school, exploring career options, or needing support in life transitions, Lansing Community College has the Adult Resource Center available to qualified students. The Adult Resource Center staff provides one-on-one appointments, registration assistance, referrals to community and campus resources, tuition and childcare grants, academic advising, and other helpful tools to help with your educational career. To find out more information, visit lcc.edu and search Adult Resource Center.
Hi, I'm Lisa Alexander, and I host a show called Who's That Star on LCC Connect. This show is all about an inside look at the LCC community, where you get a chance to meet our faculty and staff, plus learn about their passion projects at work and at home. You can catch Who's That Star here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me.
In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The
only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Founded in 1957, LCC has addressed the needs of Michigan industries through education for more than 65 years. Anchored by the downtown campus located in the heart of Lansing, LCC serves mid-Michigan communities with additional campuses in Delta Township and East Lansing. The college offers more than 200 degree and certificate programs and is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Those interested in learning more about LCC may visit lcc.edu/youbelong.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello there, this is Terry Denise, a Lansing Community College student and your host of Ripper, an LCC Connect podcast where I interview others and ask about their unique efforts and connections in, around, and beyond the community of Michigan's capital city. Hello, welcome back to Ripper. I am your host, Terry Denise, also known as Teden, and we are here again with Dedalian Lowry. We are continuing discussion that we were having beforehand, and I really appreciate your time again to extend our
You bet. You should really encourage people to interview. Listen to the previous episode because that was so awesome. You were so good.
Yes, awesome. So actually, speaking of the previous episode, it was Kylie Minogue that did the locomotion in the 80s.
Bing, bing.
So we were both correct.
There's a correct bell somewhere on that keypad.
There is.
Somewhere.
Yeah, I'll figure it out one day.
Yeah, we'll have to do that some other day.
So, yes, it's still...
That's training part two.
Yes, I'm very excited about learning about the pads here. So actually, to continue on where we left off, I was asking about your name and if it had an origin. When I first met you, I kept thinking your name was Daedalus.
Oh, Daedalus.
Or Daedalus.
Well, Daedalus is typically how it would be pronounced.
Is it? Okay.
And that's what is from, yes. That is correct. So do you want to know the story of how I got the name, or do you want to know the story behind the name?
So,
or both?
Yes, I want to know both. To start out, though, because I was a theater kid, and of course we had to, you know about mythology and everything like that. Daedalus was one of was it Greek or Roman?
Yeah, it's out of Greek mythology.
So that was an inventor.
He was. He was an inventor. He very smart guy, and I think what he's known most for is just being the father of Icarus.
Who flew too high towards the sun.
So as far as the name goes, my dad just wanted to give me a weird name.
Oh.
I mean, that's really, just in a nutshell, there you go. As far as the name goes, yes, it's from Daedalus, and it means intricate, ingenious, or complicated.
Hmm.
Yeah, so apparently dad had some high expectations. I definitely know that there's some ex-girlfriends that would tell you I'm complicated.
Okay.
So there's that.
I think it's hilarious. If you're not living up to some part of your name, by the way, both my first name and middle name mean to reap in some form or fashion. So I literally sow what I reap every day.
Is that
day.
The way it works?
And the show is called Ripper. And also, so Reaper, Ripper, rip it apart.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, getting back to the story of Daedalus. I'm going to give you the abridged version. Obviously, it goes in quite a bit deeper, but like I said, Daedalus means intricate, ingenious, or complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Daedalus, he was an inventor, yes. He was an artist. He was a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
but he's probably best known for being the father of Icarus. Icarus, most people know the story of him flying too close to the sun to burn his wings. Mm-hmm. Most people don't really know the story behind why he was trying to fly to the sun, and that was because him and his son Icarus were imprisoned in the labyrinth. Mm-hmm. Inside the labyrinth was the Minotaur. The Minotaur was, you know, the half man, half bull. Mm-hmm. There's actually a story behind that that I could even go even deeper into. I'm not going to, though. But they had to escape the labyrinth, so he took the feathers from the various birds that were on the island that the labyrinth was located in, mm-hmm. and he built wings for him and his son, Icarus. And he told his son, don't fly too close to the sun, otherwise your wings will burn. And if you fly too low to the sea, the salt will like get into your wings and you'll drown. But Icarus, being a very ambitious young man, wanted to touch the sun. So he tried to fly and touch the sun. Mm-hmm. I never cared for that story. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't. I don't care for that story. What's the moral of this story? So basically, the Greeks are telling you, do not try to reach your dream. Otherwise, you're going to get burned and you're going to drown and fall into the sea and die. And I mean, really? Really?
They're floating, so to speak, into the area of being too narcissistic, too godlike, maybe.
All right, I guess.
Being so arrogant as a human to think that you could be anything beyond.
But see, I've never read it that way. It does make sense. You say it, I go, okay, I can go with that. But to me, it always felt like, you know, don't reach for your dreams. You're just going to burn.
So, you know,
and maybe that's it. Maybe my brain has never read it the right way or examined it in the right way. And now that you've told me that, like, I'm just going to go ahead and go a different route now.
Oh, okay. Well, like the inventor of Daedalus, you two are very multifaceted. Was there any part of you growing up that, were you told that story as a child?
No, I actually had, I still have the dictionary that my dad found the name from.
Oh.
And that dictionary has like little summaries of stories about different Greek mythology figures,
okay.
and Roman. It's an interesting dictionary in that it's a lot different than, well, we don't really have a lot of dictionaries these days anymore, but, you know, anybody that has seen a dictionary, you know, that it's not just about words. It has like these little stories in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I have that, and that was the basis of how I knew about my name for the longest time. And then eventually, you know, I got curious because I wanted to read more about it. So I would search out books and find information about it.
Okay.
Nobody really told me, actually. And as I think about it, it wasn't like my dad ever told me or my mom or anybody like that.
No.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so you went out and pursued to find out about the origin of your name.
Yes, because it's weird.
Yeah, it is. It's different.
Yeah.
And with that, did you find yourself trying to live up to this mythological character at all? Or were you inspired? We'll just say that.
I mean, you know, I didn't build wings or anything like that. I suppose the artist side of me, mm-hmm. I suppose, has. But then again, I didn't really pursue art on a constant basis. I still do things.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't like I think the person that comes to my brain immediately is Dennis Preston. He's somebody I admire, appreciate his artwork, and he is phenomenal. But this is a guy that when I see him, you can tell he has just fully embraced his artistic side, because if you run into him someplace, you mm-hmm. can run into him at a coffee shop or whatever. He's drawing.
Yes.
That's what he does, you know, and it's just a part of him.
First of all, Dennis Preston, yes, I agree. What an amazing local artist that we have here who is well-known around the world now.
Oh, yeah.
And he does a lot of caricatures. I believe I don't know if they used stuff as for the basis of Monopoly. It seems like the way and style he drew kind of adapted to the local Monopoly games that you see kind of with a cityscape and everything like that.
I don't know that I've seen them. I'll have to take a look.
It reminded me of Dennis Preston, not necessarily the kind of caricature lyric, but just the idea of putting a whole cityscape in together here in just one drawing and everything like that, and encompassing many, many different characteristics of focus into one setting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dennis would often, like you said, in coffee shops, he would draw on napkins and just hand them out to people all day long, just doodling and everything like that.
And oddly enough, that goes back to the same reason why I liked, even though we talked about that in the first part, mm-hmm. it was the reason that I love doing what I'm doing here at LCC Connect. It introduces people to a lot of folks that I feel like people should know about.
Mm-hmm.
Denny Preston's definitely one of those people in the area. And he's actually been on, I think, a couple of different of our podcasts. But the one that comes to mind is Art Happens Here.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Mackley interviewed him, and he did a two-parter on that.
Nice.
And really some great conversation on there. And we'll make sure to include it in the show notes.
I was going to say, yeah, please check that out. And thank you for mentioning that. Along with that, I actually disagree with the statement that you said, that I do believe that your artistry comes through every day, especially when you are here working on editing and producing and making sure the production notes get in and whatnot. This is part of your art, everything that you do.
I mean, I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's funny because Bruce Mackley is the one that said to me at one point that the audio editing I do, there's an artistic factor to it. And I agree with him, but not a lot of people would know that. Because usually if you are doing a good job in your artistry of audio editing,
mm-hmm.
the goal is to make sure that nobody knows you're there. And that's the best way I can put it, is just the better job you've done in your audio editing, the more people will not notice that you edited it.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. So it's a weird kind of thing where it's like, yeah, I know there's some artistry to it, but most people don't think of it that way.
Well, I guess you're finding out different ways to prospectively see things today.
I suppose that's true.
So, all right. Were you...
Apparently that's going to be your role in my life. Thanks.
While you were a Bulldog, I'm just going to change trajectories here. Were you into sports or anything?
I was not. I was not a huge sports person. In fact, I joke about it often, but there's a lot of truth to the fact that the only way you will see me running is if somebody's chasing me with a chainsaw.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't like running. I don't like doing that kind of stuff. Doesn't mean I don't enjoy sports, because I do golf. I do bowl. But they're more leisurely sports,
sure.
that I like to do. I do like riding my bike.
Okay.
But, yeah, I was never into sports. What I did do, though, is I was very much... You know, I guess the same person I've always been. I used to MC the talent shows.
Oh.
So that was my thing in high school.
Okay.
And I also did what they called forensics, which was not what most people think of forensics. It was more like a performance kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you would take like little clips of plays and you would act them out.
That sounds like a lot of fun in and of itself.
I had a blast.
So... Only emceeing, or were you also running like production side as well?
Back then it was just mainly about the emceeing, just okay. being in front of a crowd, being goofy and silly, which is, yeah, I was really good at it back then.
All right. Well, it does seem like you did get a lot of fitness in. You had mentioned previously in the other episode, part one, that you danced, that you are a dancer.
All right,
you
fine.
Enjoy dancing.
Fine. If you want to call that exercise, call that exercise.
That is a lot of exercise. That's how a lot of people stay fit. In fact, were you ever like a b-boy or anything?
I was not.
No.
I was not. No, definitely wasn't like a b-boy. But what I did like was shows like In Living Color,
mm-hmm.
where they did the dancing and it was in
the unison, Fly Girls.
Unison. Yes, yeah. So
J-Lo.
So like there
Rosie
was
Perez.
There was a group of us that would go to the bar and we would try to do these like synchronized dances. So
okay,
that's kind of what I did. But that was back in college too. So
in this, so okay, we did this as well. Growing up, I in the church is what, but we had our little, you know, faction. And little groups that everybody would split apart in, and our little youth services. And some of us, I was a part of a team. Our moms called us the Mouseketeers, I believe. So we would put together choreographed sessions where we would put together something in, I don't know, over, if people don't know who Carmen is, they should check him out.
Carmen?
Carmen was
Carmen.
Carmen. Actually, one of his videos were featured on Red Letter Media, that podcast, in whatever faction it was very hilarious to see that in my later years, pulled out of the vault of sorts. But we would dance to like very religious related, secular sounding music. So we could put together choreographed dances and everything like that and present them to the other fellow youth and everything like that. But it was fun for us because we would go to
So am I understanding, was it more on the classical dance kind of
some
thing?
Of that stuff.
And by that I mean like ballet kind of?
No, actually. We were doing more of like very hip-hop kind of.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Because we would watch, you know, whatever faction of In Living Color we could get away with watching.
Right.
Or secular anything. It was all about, you know, Club MTV back in the day. I mean, I mean, one of my other nicknames is Downtown Terry Brown, of course. Very, 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 Wubby Wubby or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Downtown Julie Brown would always say and everything like that. Of course, one of my inspirations.
Throwing some people on a nostalgia chain here.
So very, very much into modern dance, even including kind of cheerleading things into that.
Sure.
So I get the choreographing back during that time. And of course, Hammer coming out, like you had mentioned previously, MC Hammer being a thing.
Yep.
It was huge. I don't think people really, really today understand the kind of legendary status this man put on for everybody to enjoy, the kind of money that went into this man's work and artistry that he would put out for everybody to watch and emulate. So yes, choreographed dancing was a huge, huge part of everything. You look at the Laker girls and like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders and all this stuff was such a pinnacle moment, I believe.
Right.
Back in the
late '90s. Late 80s, 90s. Yeah.
And like I said, Rosie Perez is one of the mainstays. She helped with the Lakers and with In Living Color. And then J-Lo was on
Paul
there.
Paul Abdul.
Yes, of course. Paul Abdul was one of the Lakers cheerleaders. So you guys were watching the same thing that we were. We were just younger than you at Miss U. We would watch what certain people would put together if you were in a different frat or something like that. Some of the sororities would put things together. Or just whenever, if you were out at a Gus Macker thing, I don't know.
It was just me and a couple of, we had four of us, that we would just go to the bar and just kind of come up with some sort of dance thing. I didn't do it a lot, though, so it wasn't.
No,
and honestly, I was probably, out of the four of us, the one that was the least involved, so.
Okay.
But they were really awesome at it, and I just kind of hooked on at one point and went, I'll join and do this. And so we did it for a little while. But
so you would just literally go to the club and there's like, it's on.
We would just dance because the nightlife is so different now compared to when it was back then, in that you could go to a lot of different dance clubs, but really they don't exist like they used to anymore.
You would literally dance at a dance club? You're kidding
me. Yes. No, that's what we would do.
It's crazy.
We would go into a dance club, and then the four of us would do this kind of routine.
You wouldn't just sit there and do like little stints for Instagram or anything,
no,
and that's
no,
it?
No,
and
no.
TikTok?
And we all used to talk to each other in person, too.
No.
So yeah, that
would
does
happen. Would you even like dance with another person, and it would be okay?
That would happen.
Oh, my goodness. Scary thoughts. Would you ever have dance-offs like in Zoolander?
I did not. The others did.
They did.
Yeah.
So there were actually.
I was not that confident of my ability.
No, but you would do splits. I don't understand.
I was ridiculous. That's all I know.
So were you actually coordinated?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I could dance.
You were told you can dance, basically. And you had enough confidence to be out there and do it. Do you still go out and?
I'll dance. I'm not like huge into it, but I will dance from time to time if the mood should hit me.
Okay. Yes. Is there footage of you anywhere?
No, there's probably not. No,
you were quick on that note.
I've burned or destroyed all footage of me dancing.
So when you say flailing about, it's a coordinated flail. I'm very stuck on this right now, by the way.
You are very stuck on this, a lot longer than I intended for you to go. So yes, back then. These days, my body does not move like it did back then. So you're not going to see the coordination quite happening as much. It's not as lively.
Mm-hmm.
I still move. Now I do more of the, hey, shuffle kind of a thing, you know?
The old man shuffle?
Yeah, kind of like the old man shuffle.
I get some of that,
you
know.
It's a fair statement.
And I'm by old man shuffle, I mean I do old man shuffle myself.
Well.
Like, what? So just one more thing about the dancing. any particular other styles? In my brain, I'm hearing CNC Music Factory, but were you out at any other like kind of concerts or events or
no,
beyond
no,
club?
Really. Well, here's
club music.
Well, here's the other thing about me.
Mm-hmm.
I do have an eclectic taste in music, but I will tell you back then and even still to this day, I am a heavy metal fan.
Oh.
So the concerts that I went to, I had limited disposable income back then,
mm-hmm.
which meant that if I was going to go to a concert, I wanted it to be a metal concert because that's what I really loved.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is funny because now as I look back, late 80s and early 90s, it didn't matter if you went to see Metallica or Snoop Dogg, whoever, it didn't mm-hmm. matter. $25 is pretty much what you would pay for tickets to go to a concert.
Oh, gosh.
Every time. And now it doesn't exist. And I feel terrible that it's that way.
Yeah.
Where was I going with all this?
Just different kinds of music that you're into.
We were talking about some. Oh, because you were asking me about going and dancing at shows.
Yeah.
Well, again, if you go to a Metallica show.
Threshing all around. That's why I was asking you.
Well, I will say I would get in the mosh pit.
Okay, sweet.
So I did that kind of stuff.
All right, which makes sense for the kind of flailing
which
around that
you're. Which is weird because it's completely different than going to the nightclub and dancing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. So you were getting into the pit and everything. Did you ever into the big walls or anything like that? Were you ever?
Yeah. We would do the at Lollapalooza. That got kind of ridiculous.
Oh, you were at Lollapalooza?
Yeah.
I'm going to have you back on again because I'm going to have to ask you many questions about Lollapalooza.
It was an interesting time in that I remember it was at a particular facility. I'm not going to name the facility, but back then they actually turned off the water and it was extremely hot that day. And they got in huge trouble for that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's terrible. What were the last three shows that you've been to?
My tastes have changed again. And when I go to a show, first of all, I don't really want to spend a lot of cash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I absolutely wanted to go see Elton John in his last tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that the most inexpensive seat I could get was like $300 for nosebleed.
Oh.
I couldn't justify that.
Yeah.
The last show I actually went to see was Brad Sherwood and Colin Mochrie from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
So that's what I do is I tend to go to more comedy shows than I do anything else now.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that I haven't gone to other ones and I can't tell you what the other two shows I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to the Winery Dogs at one point. They're not metal. They're rock.
Okay.
I went to Def Leppard at one point.
Def Leppard, awesome.
Most of the time, I think when I go to shows, it's usually going to be local.
Mm-hmm.
So,
any particular like one-off shows that you have tickets to or anything?
Nope.
Nothing again, set in.
I want to give you a lengthy answer, but I got nothing for you here.
Were you ever into Ministry?
No,
Ministry is going to be
really
coming around again.
No.
So
Ministry the band.
Ministry the band.
I thought you meant like the profession.
Yeah, are we looking into getting into the ministry scene? I am.
The band, yes. Well, actually, I mentioned Lollapalooza. Mm-hmm. I saw them at Pine Knob. In fact, I've seen them three times now.
Ooh.
And the one time at Pine Knob, it was kind of interesting. Al Jurgensen, the singer.
Uncle Al.
Yep, Uncle Al. He actually had to stop the show after they played Thieves because what happened was people started picking up sod, you know, big sod grass.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Sods of grass? I don't
know. Sod grass.
Anyway,
you are correct.
Started picking up sod and throwing it all over the place. The place was just like going nuts.
Oh my God.
And he stopped after that first one. And he said, you know what?
y'all need to stop doing this. You need to stop throwing it. You know, because he's getting hit with sod. You know, by any means, I get it. He's up on stage. You're getting hit with, like, big things of grass. Mm-hmm. It's not enjoyable.
No, also so when that gets into your instruments.
He stopped the show, said, either you guys stop or I'm going home. Doesn't matter to me. Either way, I'm getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one time I saw him. Very last time I saw him. Probably wasn't more than 5 years ago. I don't know. But I saw poor Uncle Al once again in Grand Rapids. And I say poor because, again, he had to stop the show.
No.
Because people were throwing beer cans. And he got hit with a can of PBR.
No way.
And it was the same thing where he's like, you know what? I'm getting paid either way. You know, either you stop throwing stuff or I'm going home. Now, he used some more explicit words that I can't use.
Yes.
The funny part is he goes, and the worst of it is you threw a PBR at me. If you're going to throw a beer at me, at least throw a quality beer at me.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, three times I've seen him, but two out of the three, he had to stop the show.
That's disappointing. But also, it is a metal show, and
it gets ridiculous.
It does, but at least the crowd was motivated.
Yeah. I mean, the song is a pretty hyped song, so.
Yeah. It'll have a lot of stompers going at it, a lot of rivet heads and whatnot, industrial kids that are into that. So, yeah, Ministry is, the reason why I asked is because Ministry is currently on tour. They're reaching back into their old collection, a particular album titled With Sympathy, which
is this the one with this is like old school.
This is from 1983. This is one of the most.
Yeah.
Al Jorgensen hated this album for so many years because it was traumatic for him to record, and he didn't have a lot of say. And you can read books, and
I mean, that's before they incorporated more to the metal sound, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. And before,
it's kind of like Trent Reznor with his first Nine Inch Nails album, Pretty Hate Machine. Completely sounds different than what you're going to hear on all the others.
Most definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And as the technology came around too, there are a lot of different sounds and different unique ways of being able to express through using these next level synthesizers and factions and everything that everybody started to incorporate into what they were using, as well as the way technology, recording technology as well. So things did start to sound different within the studios themselves. But to get to With Sympathy is from 1983. It's one of my particular favorite albums, and they are going to be using some songs from there and regenerating them in a different way.
Okay.
And playing them live. Al finally broke about his hate for that era and everything. So what happened was that he saw some band over in LA covering With Sympathy, whole album.
Yeah.
And it changed his
perspective.
Perspective. Yeah. It seems like, you know, there's a lot of changing perspectives that we've got going on here.
I will have to definitely pay attention and see if I can hear it when it comes out.
It's a great
You'll let me know anyway.
Yeah, most definitely. With that, though, I did want to ask you about King Diamond, but we are pressed for time here.
Okay.
But did you ever go and see any Merciful Fate or King Diamond?
I did not ever see King Diamond in concert, and I'll be honest with you, I never will.
No?
No, I never grew to care for his style.
That's okay. One day you'll come around.
The falsetto is just a little too much for me.
His stage performances and antics are one of the best I've seen live. He really takes opera to another level. It is.
I will keep that in mind, and maybe I'll look up some stuff and watch as long as I can.
You know, you've got to go with a lot of these guys and artists and everything. They have this mythology about them, and there's a lot of lore, just like you, Dalian. So maybe one day it'll all work out. It'll coalesce and it'll all combine.
Maybe.
All right. Well, thank you once again for coming on. I definitely have to have you back on to relay some more stories of dancing.
Yeah, no more dancing.
No more dancing. Well, we'll move on to other portions of life then. But thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for tuning in to Ripper. You can find more about this and other LCC Connect podcasts at lccconnect.com.
This is WLNZ, Lansing.
You're listening to LCC Connect Weekly, a radio program from Lansing Community College's podcast network, LCC Connect. To listen on demand, find us at lccconnect.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.